I believe our next guest is already waiting in the wings with his map of the world, the European map. It's Brent Johnson. We're going to finish on another amazing guest, a super high, the man behind the Dollar Milkshake Sherry. He's not undone by any level of pullback in the dollar in the recent events. He is up, up, up. Brent, delighted to have you back on. Thank you for coming on for our stream. And you've got the anchoring slot. You'll have the final word on a marathon. Welcome, and how you been doing?
I've been good. Thanks for having me back. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congratulations also on what's gone on and how many people have started to acknowledge. Brent was the first person that conceptualized and paraphrased to me something I never accepted, that the dollar goes to zero. I was always asking against what. It was a question that seemed to annoy people, that we break up the system on actually the dollar strength, and thereby the dollar then severs its cuts its own ladder by destroying all the other currencies. And it suddenly made instant sense. What's your take on recent events, Brent? We had a bit of a dovish number, quite a serious, I say for now, short-term pullback so far, but onwards and upwards in time, because we got another half point at least, one would imagine, in December, maybe another half in Feb. Some even think they'll go go higher. How do you see it playing out?
I think the dollar made its high at the end of September. And at the time, literally the day of the high, I sent out a tweet that said, hey, this is the time to start to get careful here. The dollar's probably due for a pullback. And I thought that it could potentially pull back as much as it has. What I thought would happen, though, is that I thought it would be more of a kind of a gradual pullback over a 2 or 3 month period. I didn't think it would kind of stay strong through last week and then have the whole 6% in a week. That's what we've had. So the last 2 days have really taken the dollar from where it was, you know, at the end of September, back down to where it was in August. So it's two of the biggest moving days I've seen in currencies, you know, as long as I've been doing this. But the reality is there was moves the other way as well that were pretty significant as well year to date. So I'm personally not surprised at the pullback in the dollar. It had gotten a little ahead of itself. It needed a pullback. And I'm not surprised at the magnitude of the pullback. I'm a little surprised at the speed with which it happened. But I think this is my opinion, and I can be wrong on this, is that I think the market is misinterpreting a little bit the inflationary numbers. It makes sense when the inflation numbers come in, and therefore you think interest rate hikes are going to slow. So on a relative basis, you think that the Fed is not going to tighten as much. It makes total sense for the dollar to have pulled back on that news. I just think it's gotten a little bit overdone so quickly, because I don't think, part of the reason I think it's gotten a little overdone is because of what's happened on the other side of things. On the other side of things, oil has rallied. Equities have had one of their biggest up days in history yesterday. And a lot of these things are going to make it easier for Powell to keep hiking.
Yeah.
He could not have been more clear at the FOMC, you know, a week and a half ago, or is it 2 weeks ago now? Maybe it's just last week. It was just last week, where, you know, he came out and he was like, listen, we are not stopping. I'm going to continue to hike. We need to get inflation down to 2%. Now, you may think he's wrong, and you may think he's lying, and you may think that he will fail at what he's trying to do, but he has spoken more clearly than any central banker I have ever seen. And so the ironic thing is that the market trying to front run him is actually allowing him to keep hiking. He will pivot, and don't get me wrong. That's, central bankers are there to be, step into the void and pivot and save the system when it's needed. But when the VIX is falling and the dollar's coming off and equities are rallying, there's not too much that he really needs to do to save the system under that scenario. So it just gives him more room to hike. So that's kind of where I see we're at right now. I think that this dollar move pullback is getting close to being done. It wouldn't shock me at all if you know, we have a little bit more weakness early next week, but I, by the end of next week, I think we're probably moving back to the upside.
I concur. I think with the momentum that you referred to, that was somewhat surprising. It was quite brutal. And I think I agree with your interpretation. It seems there's a bunch of back to the Fed puts, you're going to go straight to stimulus, never mind rate cuts. It's almost as if we've gone straight to zero and we're straight back to have $6 trillion in the market again. It's a massive, it feels like a massive leap. It seems highly assumptive. And as you were saying, the irony of it is the more they keep treating buy the damn, you know, dip on equity markets as a trading strategy, the more it's almost certainly to be different this time. It just feels absolutely exuberant for risk on assets to be doing anything like this right now. And I was describing that the Fed almost needs to be holding the whip handle as the leader hawk in this game, because if they're not, they will be handing the initiative to somebody else. They can't fall back into the peloton. It's almost like they're running out in front of an avalanche. He's almost destined to have to remain out front. Otherwise, he's going to get hit with the rocks. And that means he's got to keep. And as you quite clearly said, he was quite explicit about that's not the final hike. The only thing I might say is that the rate at which the hikes will come might reduce somewhat. But yeah, we're talking December and February. They will be February in no time. This year's gone. It's gone so quickly. I can remember the last time we were speaking.
The part that I think is interesting is, I think at the beginning of the year, if I had told you they're going to hike to 4%, equity markets will be volatile, but they'll really only be down in the, you know, single digits or high or low double digits range, I think people would have said absolutely no way.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are. I mean, at one point, the markets were down 20 or 30%, but now they're down anywhere, I don't know, 8% to 15%, depending on which market you're looking at, right? So, and you know, I think if you'd have said at the beginning, if you'd have told Powell at the beginning of the year that he could hike rates to 4% and stock markets would be down 10%, I think he'd have said done. He'd have hit that bid right away, right? Yeah. And I don't think anybody would have said he could do it. But yet here we are. Now, I should caution that and say, I don't expect this to stay this way. I still think that equity markets are going to roll over and go back down. And the reason that I think that they are is because I think Powell wants them to. And let me explain what I'm saying here. I think there's a lot of people who think that Powell didn't like the fact that the markets were going down so much. I think they did. I think they thought he didn't like the fact that bond prices were going down. And maybe he didn't like it that the dollar was going up as much as it was. But I think that's exactly what he wanted. I think his only way that he can control inflation is by killing demand, right? And so he is trying to kill demand, and he's trying to kill the leverage in the system. Well, if you get asset prices lower, it means there's less leverage available. And if you kill demand, it means there's less, you know, demand for goods, which means prices probably come down. There's this famous saying that I actually don't know who said it, but, you know, show me someone's incentives and I'll show you the outcome. You know, Powell at this point, he has plenty of money himself. If you remember when he first came onto the scene, he was raising rates and people said, you can't raise rates. And he wanted to cure the system of leverage. And so he raised rates, and he raised rates until it was too late. He did not pivot early. He raised rates until the market broke in December of 2008, and then he pivoted. Right. Yeah. And so then we get into COVID, and I think he is very, very embarrassed on a personal level. I think he's mad. I think he's annoyed. I think he's embarrassed. And I think at this point, he is more concerned about his legacy than he is about the level of your 401k.
Yeah.
And so he wants to be another Volcker. He doesn't want to be another Arthur Burns. He wants to be another Volcker. And so I think he is bound and determined. Through the only method he knows how is to keep hiking until he gets asset prices down, which he believes will then translate into inflation coming down. So think about this, you know, with now asset prices rising again, and if the dollar continues to come off from here, then that probably means that asset prices are going higher, which means there's more leverage in the system, or there's the ability for more leverage, which means there's the ability for prices to go higher, which is what he doesn't want. If the dollar continues to come down, it probably means that other commodities rise in relation to the dollar. And so that increases inflationary pressures. As oil, the dollar started to come down, oil has started to go up over the last week. That contributes to inflationary pressures. This is not exactly going the way he wants if his legacy is the guy that killed inflation. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that he wants markets to collapse. He doesn't want markets to collapse, but he does want to get inflation under control.
Yeah.
And if he were to pivot now, or if he were to slow down now, and then we get into January and February, and the inflation prints start exceeding expectations again, we've had one that missed, but if they start exceeding expectations again and he's pivoted too early, all of his credibility will be gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the last thing that he wants to happen.
I 100% agree with that. Now, I was actually going to refer, and I mentioned it to an earlier guest, that's actually Larry Summers, who's quite a big voice and has got ambitions, I hear, again, is not yet done with his career, but he's had already quite big political opinions before. Maybe a big old monster of the Clinton era, was it, right the way through to Obama and etc. He was actually saying, he was quite hawkish, which I was slightly surprising for me, because I kind of positioned him as a sort of leftist, a little bit of both, not clearly one or the other, but a little bit Democrat maybe. And he was saying, your legacy will not be worn well if you don't contain inflation. And that was almost like a voice from them. And that would have been one that would have chilled Powell, a comment I think that would have chilled him. And my overall opinion is that they overstimulated for COVID. They created this massive 60% pump. I mean, ARK, the NASDAQ went from 6,000 at the low to 16,000 in the space of literally 18 months. And they created a huge amount of inflation. And he was by far in every element and is on record now of being grossly behind the curve. They lied about their level of inflation. They said there was none. Then they said there was just a little bit. Then they said there's some, but it's transitory. I mean, they literally lied every way, whether it was a lie or incompetence. And he's trying to correct for that now that he let the horse bolted. He's trying to really commit himself to getting those horses back. And he's going to chase. He's going to keep chasing. And it feels...
I think it's important to point this out, because I know for sure that there's people listening right now who are saying, this is crazy. The Fed wants inflation. This is how they get out of this, huge amount of debt. They want to inflate the debt away. And there's absolutely truth to that. Time and time again, history has shown that governments want to inflate their way out of over indebtedness. So it's not that I'm missing that piece.
No.
But the difference is what governments typically want is something like 3-5% inflation.
Yes.
Because then it's inflationary and it hurts, but it's not so painful that you just can't even stand it. But they do not want 10% inflation. They do not want 12% inflation or 15% inflation, because at those levels, it becomes politically unpalatable for them to do so, right? That's when you get inflation at those levels, the populace starts pushing back and they start pointing fingers and they start saying, you guys screwed this up. And so when it's at 3%, 4%, even 5%, if you do that for 10 years, you've just whittled away 30-50% of the debt.
Yeah.
The problem is it's very hard to get. And so this is why it's, financial repression works very good on a spreadsheet. It's a lot harder to actually pull it off in a calm and serene manner in the real world.
Yeah.
And so the idea that Powell doesn't want to get inflation down is wrong. He does want to get inflation down. Yeah. Now, he doesn't want to go back to deflation necessarily. Over time, they do want to inflate this debt away. But no central banker wants to be, overseeing a regime that has double-digit inflation year after year after year. That's how they lose their legacy.
Yeah, I think it's Rudy Havenstein of the Weimar Republic. Nobody wants that tag, do they?
Right.
Yeah, it just is the guy who lost the game, completely let it fall apart, and it's terrible for him personally. And as you say, they want to compound against you over time. They don't want a disorderly market, and it's also politically very damaging for whichever party's in control. It's insane. So interestingly, This has given us our second dip, technically, and this was a point I was making to our community. We're actually looking for three dips on the USD Hong Kong dollar. So I'm going to take you back to the bring China into this, that I think is in far worse condition, but it just doesn't get the same media coverage that Europe and the States get. Just because media is set up that way, or maybe not that much news really escapes very easily out there. I don't know which is the other. But you might recall we did the Real Vision check-in with each other. And we called for this Hang Seng to sell off, and that said there was indicative of, we were in the orange box round about there, and we called for the Hang Seng to sell off through that level over there. And we're now getting the rebound of a target run as an indication of flight capital departing. And that I expect this also much is a counter trend rally, much like the dollar is in a correction in a bull market. And if we have a look, not the Korean won, but if I pop over to where we're going, sorry, the Hong Kong dollar, which is the peg call, our opinion was we expect two dips. And then a smaller third dip, so a reinflate back up to the peg. This is a technical sign, and we gave it quarter one, and I think we still could be accurate on quarter one, although I would have preferred to have said H1 for this ascending triangle bumping up against this, because you typically get three impulses. We actually had a small shot in it on a smaller structure, but that wasn't the one that broke down. And that was the foundational breakdown. That was the last time, the second last time. This is obviously the last time that we're seeing now. But I think we reflate, we bump up against the rev limiter again a little bit longer. We then get a very minor one. And then the next move is actually up, up and away. What's your take on how you see things, China, Hong Kong? And the one thing I always get, just sorry, let me add one component and then I'll zip it. The one component answer I always get from folks is that, oh, they've got so much money and reserves to do this, as if that's a fruitful use of money and reserves. But they could defend us for this long. This is what they have on their balance sheet, et cetera, et cetera. And I always think, I don't see it surviving and I don't see it as fruitful. But what's your answer to people that say, but they've still got more money to waste?
Well, so two things. Number one, they do have more money to waste, but at some point you don't want to throw... You just keep burning your money. So number one, so yes, they do have a lot of reserves. But number two is that it's not, all those reserves aren't just sitting in cash.
No.
Some of it is in private equity. Some of it is in real estate. Some of it is in these long-term projects. Some of it is already spoken for and budgeted. The money that they have that's kind of in liquid form that can be used to defend the peg is currently around, I haven't looked in the last couple of days, but I think it's around 10 billion US. It's like, I think it's getting down to less than 100 billion Hong Kong. So I think it's like 10 to 12 billion US. And so, if 12 billion, it wouldn't take a whole lot for $12 billion to leave Hong Kong, which would completely deplete the liquid reserves to defend the peg. The other thing is the reason they have all those reserves is it built up over a 30-year period where money was constantly flowing into China or flowing into Hong Kong.
Yes.
That money's no longer flowing in to the same extent it was. So even if they do, and the other thing is, so if they burn through these liquid reserves, and then they have to start liquidating their kind of longer term reserves in order to defend the peg, that's going to show up. And when the bond vigilantes and the currency vigilantes and the big market makers see them scrambling to defend the peg, and selling their, the family silver in order to do so, I would argue that they're not just going to sit around and watch. Yeah. That's when they're going to descend in masses. So, I think with the dollar weakness the last couple of days, they're probably very happy to be able to breathe a little easier for a couple of days. But again, I don't think that this dollar weakness is going to last very long. It could last for a while, but I don't think that it's going to last very long. And as the dollar starts to get strong again, I think that's going to put pressure back on Hong Kong.
I 100% concur with that. And I'm just looking at this chart. It didn't make the same low as the previous one. So the ability, and if you look at, say, the Korean won, So when was the last sell-off? We had kind of August 22. So that was the last sell-off. If you take a rival Asian currency, this sell-off currently is far more brutal this time than it was in August on the Korean won. But on the Hong Kong dollar, in actual fact, it's not. So there's
Yeah,
a
no,
complete
exactly.
divergence technically here in between the two. I can put them under each other to make that point, but it just shows that they are clearly not in the same situation. I mean, you've got a chronic pullback here on the one, and we are bulls, the USD Korean won. We think a blow off will happen, but there's no getting around. This is a high momentum corrective action. It's a bit like the yen situation, but if we put the two underneath each other, let's get August there and August. There's November under November. Let's get this as close to accurate as possible. Just line these two babies up. This you got a bigger reaction on the Hong Kong dollar there than the Korean one, and now you've had a much larger correction, and you can't run the previous low. And in actual fact, you're getting a bid up wick here where you're 50% back up, and it's probably the earliest currency for a reversal back up while the others are
That's
still
right.
smalling.
That's
It's
right.
ceasing to go down. I just point that out as a technical observation, which I think further backs you in terms of the state of play on those markets.
Well, the other thing you have to remember too is listen, I'm not trying to make light of this pullback in the dollar. This is a heck of a pullback in the dollar over a week's period. So I'm not making light of it. The point I'm making is that it's not unheard of after the move that it made to the upside to have a corrective move and to regain, take a breath and then move back up. But what you have to remember is when the dollar comes down this much, it means that these other currencies, the yen, the euro, the pound, are going up that much. And when you look at those economies, the idea that the pound and the euro and the yen are in better shape than the United States, it's just if you're being really just brutally honest and looking at these things on an objective basis, the US has tons of problems, but their problems aren't nearly as large as these other three currencies. So I would recommend that people, use this period of dollar weakness, whether it just lasts a couple more days or a couple more weeks, to reposition for its strength, not for it to continue going down.
Yes, that's a real golden opportunity. I've had so many people that have said, oh, when can we get in XYZ, the USD JPY, for example. I haven't looked at the yen. I'm sure it's correcting a great deal. But you've got to remember, these are the guys that are actually maintaining their debt market at a 0.025 interest rate. They literally have surrendered currency and said their debt market must be retained at current valuations. This literally is a propping up exercise for which the currency deserves to be absolutely washed away, because the US next month could be on 4.5% and could be on 5% in February. And what are they going to be at? 0.25? How's that for interest rates diversion?
And do you remember what Fed funds were at in spring of 2008 before the whole great global financial
I
crisis?
don't know.
In 2007, they were around 5%, which is not too far away from where we are right now. And in the spring of 2008, I think they were at 3.5%. So Fed funds right now are already higher than they were going into the global financial crisis. So the point that I'm making here, and I've tried very hard in my different interviews and podcasts and posts to explain not just not I've tried not to just say the dollar is going higher. I've tried very hard to explain to people why it's going to go higher. And when you think about the dollar going lower over the last week, it's in the anticipation that we're not going to hike as much, which I get it. On a relative basis, you want to see how currencies are moving to each other, relative interest rates and a number of different things. But in the US, we're talking about the pace of hikes. In other words, they're still tightening. All of these other countries are doing QE in one form or another.
Yes.
So, understand the reasons why these moves are happening, and then ask yourself, does it really make sense that they continue to happen at the same magnitude that they have already happened. And I would argue that the big move down in the dollar has largely already occurred.
Yes, it doesn't make sense with two half points potentially on the table before we've even had, you know, Easter. It's absolutely insane that a nation state at 0.25 is actually getting this level and this degree of momentum. And it tells me that a market is entirely misinterpreting that. But I suppose you can't say the market is wrong. It is the aggregated opinion.
The market's always right.
But in essence, I do think it could be very right in the opposite direction soon when we continue to see these things taking place. What about the gold? I mean, at the end of the day, Santiago AU Fund, your Twitter handle is Gold Fund. Yep. What's your take? I mean, gold's getting a little bit of a bid now.
Yeah, I mean, I think of gold differently than a lot of people. I think of gold as two different things. I think of my physical gold allocation, which I'm really just never going to sell until we have the crisis. And it goes up to wherever it goes up to, and then that's my insurance policy, and I cash it in. So that I think when for that allocation, you don't really try to time it. If you don't own any gold already, then I think you should own it.
Yeah.
On tactically, I actually think that, you know, we may be making another thrust higher in the next day or two, but after that, I think it's more likely than not that it will come back down. And again, not because I think gold is bad, not because I think that nobody should own it, but because I think that rate hikes in the U.S. are going to continue going higher for the time being. And as that happens, real rates will go higher. And gold, I think, trades on real rates. Now, there will come a time where the Fed will actually pivot rather than just people anticipating the pivot. And at that time, I think that's when gold would really break out to the upside.
Yeah, I agree. I'm concerned, actually, for the paper price. Because I think they have to break something, and the process of breaking something is going to be very deflationary. And as a result, the paper price will, the spot paper price, this derivative that we call the actual price of gold, will fall very far. What will happen on premiums as people see this play out, and as I think the scale will go on, could be a different story. And I'm almost interested, and we've been mentioning, and we got a chat with some guys to actually calculate the cost of a gold ounce in hand with delivery, with premiums and everything, and do a different gold chart. I eventually see a divergence though between paper spots until it either turns into irrelevance or it quickly corrects to not become an irrelevance. But that kind of happens post a drama. We're waiting for a drama. And we were just discussing at tail end of the Lynette Zhang as you were coming in, that it kind of feels it can't be too far off, because you just mentioned going into the 2008 crisis, we're at around 3.25, and just before that 5. We're looking at another percentage by the end of February, aren't we? In all likelihood, if Powell sticks to it, short of something happening before then. So we were either waiting for a calamitous event that could be a war or non-financial nature, or we are waiting for a credit-based event or a derivative banking-based event by H1 2023, which could lead to a super spike in the dollar, in my opinion. And the volatility in FX is suddenly climbing. Do you remember that? You know, it was FX had become dull. I was an FX trader. It had become worthless. It had become dull. Everything seemed so engineered. The euro was sort of in between 112 and 125. Years went by. No major movements of anything. And since the debt markets and all of these have come into, I've kept referring to the crypto, the FX is the new crypto market. In essence, in a slight, not 100%. It's never going to be that much, a bit of an exaggeration, but we're seeing serious volatility. And I mean, I think today with the sell-off is another example. The FX volatility is going up immensely. I think that's a great precursor for a dollar spike. It continues to expand. Markets don't know what to make. We're getting wild gyrations.
Well, It's a good way to talk about it. And again, this is something that I've tried very hard to point out is, listen, I'm not actually a huge fan of the dollar. I'm not a huge fan of fiat currency. I understand all the problems that go along with it. But when you understand the design of the system, a risk-off event does not involve the dollar going lower. If you have a big deleveraging event, the collateral that underlies the entire system goes higher. That's how prices go lower. And that, like it or not, whether you think it's deserved or not, whether you think it should be this way or not, doesn't really matter. The fact is, the dollar underlies the whole system. So if we get this big crisis that many people are thinking about, it's not the dollar going lower. The dollar going lower actually allows the system to continue functioning the way it's functioned for several years. It perpetuates the system. What completely wrecks the entire system is the dollar getting away to the upside, not getting away to the downside. I mean, just look what's happened over the last week. Dollar's down 6%, equity markets are up 10%, right? That's not exactly a collapse.
No.
No. Right? And so that the dollar going lower doesn't seem to be a problem for asset prices. But when you get into a crisis and people scramble for the collateral that underlies the entire system, that's the dollar going higher.
Absolutely. It's the safety trade, isn't it? It functions as that, even though it's not fully that. As you said, neither of us are fans of fiat systems and the debasement of Federal Reserve, etc. But that's how it functions as the currency of the world. So going in, what have you found this year? I mean, this is the Great Awakening theme. Have you found more and more people have awakened to, for example, the dollar milkshake theory? Apart from that, is there anything that you've seen? I mean, you might have already observed, because I think you're ahead of the curve personally, but that others around you, or is there something that new that popped up for you that has been a bit of an awakening in terms of the system?
Well, I do think that there has been an awakening that, you know, maybe just because the Fed has done all these QE programs and everything since 2008, that it doesn't automatically mean that the dollar index goes lower, right? I mean, since the beginning of QE in 2008, the dollar index is up 30%. Despite QE1, QE2, helicopter money, stimulus, all of that stuff, the dollar has risen dramatically against all of its peers. And so I do think, you know, whereas a year ago, people would say the dollar index isn't going to rise, the Fed has it under control, it's not going to rise. Now they've said, okay, well, the dollar index has risen, but the dollar itself really hasn't, because we have these inflationary markets. Okay, so that's fine. What I've already seen just in the last week, as the dollar has started to pull back, a lot of the dollar bears, as I call them, is, you know, they've already kind of come out of the woodwork and say, oh, that was it. See, dollar's going down now, you know, say goodbye. And listen, that could be the case. Nothing is certain. I don't know for sure. But my point is, nothing has really changed other than people's expectations. The system is still designed the same way. So I think there has been an awakening as far as the potential for the dollar to go higher, but I don't think the belief that it will actually go higher has changed a whole lot. I think people are more open to it, but they haven't really come around and said, yeah, it's going to happen. So that's been kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah. And our scenario is actually in a crisis that could super spike, though. And I don't see many people see that.
Yeah.
If you have this full-blown debt crisis, you actually will get a blow-off like you haven't seen in FX markets.
This is the point I've tried to make to people, is that I think if we get into this real debt crisis, I think it's possible that U.S. equities go higher. And the thing is, as equities go higher, or at least don't crash, right? As U.S. equities either just hold their own or don't crash, that allows Powell to keep hiking, right? The market is sort of giving him the soft landing that nobody thought was possible.
If everybody keeps
trying to front run him and keeps putting capital into the market, it allows him to keep raising. And as he keeps raising, it allows the dollar to keep getting stronger and stronger, right? And so, you know, And if we get a crisis, not just a financial problems, but think about, we've got the war in Europe, right? And potentially expanding war in Europe. If capital starts to leave Europe because wants to get out of where it thinks there could be an expanding war, then more money comes to the U.S. If capital, you know, if capital decides to leave Japan because they're just killing the currency, and that comes to the U.S., again, it allows Powell to keep hiking it, as long as the equity markets hold up. Again, it's going to be the equity market falling and asset prices crashing that's going to force him to pivot. Asset prices going higher is not going to force him to pivot. It's going to allow him to tighten more than anybody thinks possible.
I agree with that. And do you think we're presumptuous? We think the market is misinterpreting it. And we've also said that the market's always right. Is it possible that there's an inflationary re-rating and that there's actually a real terms aspect in this? In other words, people are saying, well, we've now had, you know, 6 months, a year of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8%
Yep.
Actually, there's also maybe we are not viewing this in real terms, or are we really, are we too overvalued generally in equities, just judging by PEG ratios, PEs generally, and that's just an excuse. It's not really a, it's not a real adjustment. It's just, it needs to come down and people haven't accepted that yet.
I think it's maybe a little bit of both. I think part of the market going higher is really just people trying to front run Powell. Because I think because we are now so accustomed to QE, that everybody thinks at the first sign of any little trouble, he's just going to do a complete reversal and throw the spigots back on. But if he does a complete reversal, the point is as long as the markets keep going up, he doesn't have to do a complete reversal. And so I think people are just fundamentally misunderstanding cause and effect. Yeah. It's asset prices going down that causes the QE. Yes. It's not QE that causes the asset prices to go up, right? Yeah. If you think that QE is coming back, then you're probably a deflationist, because QE is what hurts deflation, or QE is the combatant to deflation. If you think that inflation is here to stay and is only going to go higher, then you probably think he's going to keep raising rates. And if you don't think those things, then I think you're thinking of it incorrectly. So my point is he will keep hiking until either something breaks or the market trades significantly lower. And then he will pivot. But he won't pivot just because you want him to pivot, right? He needs a catalyst. He needs a catalyst to pivot. And I think markets need to reprice lower to give him that catalyst to pivot.
And what happens in the debt markets if the markets keep not pricing that in? Because eventually it gets to rates that surely should cause some form of derivative failure or bigger.
Well, that's the thing is, eventually it will. That's the thing is, you know, that's kind of why the more the market rallies in anticipation of him pivoting, it actually makes the ultimate boom even bigger, because it allows him to keep. If people remember, think back to 2018, and if you don't remember, go back and look. I think he raised three or four times in 2018. And in October of 2018, the market had a big, big sell-off.
It was
a 5 to 10% sell-off over a couple of days. And I think a lot of people thought, okay, now that that's happening, he's not going to hike anymore. But then we got into December and he hiked again, you know, and then the market went down like 10% over, you know, 4 or 5 days. There was a big sell-off Christmas Eve. Mnuchin got on the phone with all the bankers on Christmas Day. And then we had this big, you know, the pivot came on, I think it was December 26th or December 27th, where, you know, they reversed the cut, or they reversed the rate hike and they went back to QE. But he needed that resetting of asset prices lower in order to pivot. And so I think we're kind of in that same situation again. He will pivot, but he won't do it until there's pain.
Yeah. And as long as they keep giving joy and reflation, it buys him more runway for pain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because think, you know, this is what I was mentioning earlier. If he thinks that a crisis is coming and he knows that he's going to have to pivot at some point, the more cushion he gives himself, the more firepower he's going to have. So every time the market goes higher and every time he raises rates, he's reloading his gun, right?
Yes.
Because for my cuts. Point is that he now has... Yeah, he has more bullets for cuts. He has more room for cuts. He has more room for cuts now than Bernanke did in 2008. And that's kind of the point I was making earlier. Yeah. you know, in 2008, when Bernanke got really aggressive and cut rates and did QE, Powell now has more firepower than Bernanke had in 2008.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He'll have 5% to cut at the end of February, it seems, which is an absolute epic amount. So what's your predictions, Brent? I mean, I think we know the dollar milkshake very clearly and where you stand on that, and you've elaborated it very clearly many times. What's your, anything else? How do you position? I mean, you're a man who manages a fund.
So I've been long equities for years. I've had them hedged most of this year. So we have done pretty well this year because we haven't gotten hurt on the drought, on the drawdowns, or we haven't gotten hurt as bad as, you know, most. Where I've struggled a little bit is, other than the rally in October, I didn't participate in the rally in July, participated in some of the rally in October, and now I have not participated in this rally over the last week. Well, I shouldn't say I've participated, but I didn't buy calls. I wasn't leveraged long or anything, but by the fact that we didn't go down so much in the first half of the year, we're still in pretty good shape. I was talking to somebody this morning, and I can't remember the last time that I was this ambivalent about which direction equities go from here between now and the end of the year. I really just don't know. But I think between now and the end of the first quarter, I think that they go lower and probably materially lower. Because I think that's what Powell wants, and I think that's what Powell's going to get. But over the next, my gut tells me that this rally over the last couple of days is way overdone. I think they've totally misinterpreted Powell, and I think they've totally misinterpreted the slowing of the cuts or the slowing of the hikes. And so my bias is that equities will roll over and go back down between now and the end of the year. But again, I can obviously be wrong.
Will we be getting? I mean, I've always been positioned for new lows and much lower lows. But as yet, we've had quite a few rallies and we've got quite a way to fall for the Dow particularly, maybe not so much the NASDAQ and the before they actually make proper new lows. Is it your opinion that during the quarter one, we will see the equity indices at much lower lows, making a lower low at least?
That's a good question. I think we will revisit the lows, and I'm not sure whether we will make new ones. I think it's likely we make new ones, but I think at a minimum, we'll go back and revisit the lows. I don't mind saying things and being wrong because, you know, to be able to predict the future and think you're never going to be wrong is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Powell wants to get inflation down. And I think the only way he's going to get inflation down is to continue in raising rates. And I think that will eventually show up in markets, and I think that will mean asset prices are lower, and I think equities will revisit the lows. Now, whether that happens in the next 6 days or the next 4 months, I don't know, but I do think that, you know, I think if the market keeps rallying and misinterpreting Powell's intentions, I think he's going to keep raising rates.
But the wealth effect that people get out of equities going up and property going up is substantial and is inflationary. If he's increasing the payments that people have to make on property purchases and the property market is turning down, we'll get a negative wealth effect on property. But at the moment, that's being counterbalanced by quite a strong equity culture in the States, with the equity market going up to some degree. Are people being more hurt by the economic environment and people reducing spend? I'd imagine yes. We were discussing that we have this view of hyperstagflation. So in essence, you have a very strong recession in an environment of very stubborn inflation. As I say, I think there's a bit of fluff in inflation, especially if you take Biden's dumping of strategic oil, where energies are an intricate part. They could have engineered a little bit of a coming off, but that, you know, there might be a bit of softness, but eventually you get to the bone on inflation and it's very hard to get lower once you've got any easy gains. And a lot of that's in the energy markets, with, you know, WTI still upper 80s, Brent's in the mid 90s, you know, it's strong and it's not going away. What you'll have is it'll get higher if you're killing the dollar as well. So it'll actually bring some of that inflation you were exporting to Europe and Britain and everybody else back on shore to the States, he also doesn't want. He wants to stay out in front of the avalanches and running at the speed of it. So he's got to export that pain, because it's all about national. It's about everyone's in it for themselves, and you know, no fair play to him. He's for America. And yeah, it's just a very curious.
I think you've touched on something that I've talked a lot about this year, is that, you know, as the dollar kept getting stronger, then people started talking about the Plaza Accord again, right? And they started talking about the damage that it's doing to other countries. I've been of the opinion all year, and I'm still of this opinion, that the dollar getting stronger, while the primary reason it got stronger was because of the rate hikes and because Powell's trying to crush inflation. I think that the secondary effect of that, they didn't mind either, was that as the dollar gets stronger, it puts the rest of the world under extreme pressure. And so I think it was being used as a geopolitical tool, yes, as well as a domestic tool to fight inflation. And, you know, for those that are calling for a Plaza Accord doesn't really help the U.S. right now. You know, a strong dollar helps the U.S. on many ways more than a weak dollar does right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, go back to the whose self-interest is when you have an action. Well, if it doesn't benefit the U.S. to do a Plaza Accord, then why would they do it? I understand how it benefits the rest of the world, but it doesn't benefit the U.S. right now. And in fact, you could argue it would hurt the U.S. in several different ways. So I think the idea that a Plaza Accord is right around the corner is just wrong. And so as the dollar has pulled back a little bit, I think that again, that gives them more room if it goes higher, that they can use it as a geopolitical tool again.
And the geopolitics behind that is also to saber rattle the BRICS nation, and make the challenge almost bigger for them as a slowly coagulating rival. I mean, the dollar became on very strong when the euro launched officially, and the euro fell from 160 to 80 cents. So it's kind of always remember I'm the boss on this street.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and that's the point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to make this point. Is people always ask me what will eventually make the dollar go lower, and my answer is what will eventually make the dollar go lower is when the U.S. decides it wants it's lower, right? The reason the dollar has gone up this year is because of U.S. actions.
Yes.
And the reason the dollar has gone down over the last week is because of U.S. actions, yes, or potential U.S. actions.
Yes.
There's nothing the rest of the world has done to make the dollar either go up or down. No. The U.S., the Fed, they as of right now, they are in control of which way the dollar goes. And, you know, maybe someday that will change, but right now that is not the case.
It's such a good point that it's in essence they control that, because so many people say, well, the dollar's gone down. There's this caricature. It's almost a childish refrain. Well, the Chinese dump treasuries. You won't kill the dollar by dumping treasuries. You can create a liquidity event. You can cause a blip, but in the long run, if they're aware of that's your intent, they'll take countervailing policies that will see it dominate that and overwhelm that particular.
Yep.
Short of the whole world coordinating a simultaneous not-for-profit sale,
exactly.
It would be very hard to do, which they wouldn't want to do because they're actually cashing in an asset. So you wouldn't want to. Yeah, so there is nothing the rest of the world does. And everybody thinks the rest of the world will kill the dollar. China will kill, a big nation will kill the dollar.
The U.S. will be the one to kill the dollar.
That's right. And
when it most suits them to do it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. And I agree. And that's always a refrain that just doesn't understand the dynamics of who controls what. So going into 2023, any major predictions outside of the dollar, Brent? How do you want to position? What do you think about?
I'm positioned very defensively between now and probably the end of Q1. I don't want to be anywhere near the emerging markets. I think the emerging markets are in a lot of trouble. I think those who are allocating away from the U.S. into emerging markets are not doing the right thing. I think they're going to end up getting hurt. And I think, you know, my guess is that at some point in 2023, I will be very bullish U.S. equities. I don't know, you know, I think we're going to have to make a low before I say that. But my guess is that we will get to a point where I will say that's the time to load up on U.S. equities.
But it won't be tech this time that you're going to load up? What do you think you'll be loading up, or could it be tech?
I think it'll be like, I think it'll likely be the big blue chip U.S. equities that pay nice dividends. It'll be Coca-Cola. It'll be Raytheon. It will be Philip Morris. It will be, you know, the big battleship companies that can withstand with recessions and that are paying dividends. Because, and I think those companies will also, you know, be the most likely to get the capital flows from around the world that are looking for something similar. I mean, again, if you think about it, if you're a European investor and you have the choice between investing in the U.S. or investing in Europe, and you have, you know, you can buy Coca-Cola, which pays you a 4% dividend, and then if the euro goes down 5% or 6% or 10%, now all of a sudden you've got a 10, 15% return. And, you know, it's not a horrible strategy.
No. What about commodities and commodity cycle? Once we've had, let's say we've now had a problem, a debt-based event, we've collapsed on equities, we've collapsed on many risk-on assets, Bitcoin's gone down, we might need to talk about that separately, gold paper price gone down, etc. Would you also scoop commodities? Do you think we are still early doors on the commodity play?
I think we're still a little bit early, but you know, you mentioned it earlier, the stagflation. Like, I think commodity prices, if we get this deflation, short-term deflationary event, or, you know, where the markets just kind of seize up, I would expect commodity prices to go down during that time period. But they might not go down as much as they did back in 2020 because of the supply chain issues. And, you know, you don't have the abundance of supply that you had back in 2020. So the sell-off could be muted. And then, you know, if there is some kind of movement back to QE or more liquidity, then I would expect commodities to really take off.
Yeah, I like that. So they could go.
The short answer is right now, until we get a repricing of assets, I'm being pretty conservative.
Yeah. Chris really likes the dirty anti-ESG energies that almost banks won't lend for now. It's almost like a monopoly, an oligopoly at least, for those that have got in the offshore oils, and they're quite risky, obviously, but on account of the credibility gap between real green solutions that properly deal with all the inconsistencies of wind and solar and batteries and all of the things that are required that are of mining nature to even do batteries and various other things. How do you feel about energies, particularly, say, slightly more risky energies after, let's say...
I like them. Again, I think if we get into this market event, I think everything sells off. I mean, that's typically just how it happens. But in general, I do like those. I think a lot of this move towards green energy, it's great in theory, but it's just not ready. And then so while it's not ready, you know, these older traditional energy sources, or whether it's coal or whether it's... you know, whether it's uranium or whether it's some of these other, you know, traditional energy sources, I think are going to be in demand. So I would be looking to buy those on some kind of a dip.
Yeah, great. Awesome. That's a great, great contribution.
I wish I had a lot more specific ideas for you right now. But to be honest, like I said, until we have this market event, I'm really just kind of being careful. I think many opportunities are going to present itself in 2013, or sorry, in 2023. Yeah. So this is what I would say, even though we're in a, if I could leave the audience with a thought, it would be that even though we're in an inflationary environment, and if you just sit in cash, you probably lose purchasing power. There's nothing wrong with having cash in your portfolio. It will give you a couple things. It will give you peace of mind, and it will let you sleep at night. And those two things are underrated, because if you're stressed, you're not going to make good decisions, right? So if having cash allows you to think more clearly, then that right there is giving you a leg up in the game. And if there's some kind of a dislocation in the markets, if you don't have any cash to go put to work, then it doesn't really do you any good. But if you have cash on the sidelines and some asset that you really want to own or that has the potential to do really well gets repriced 20% lower, 30% lower, and you have the opportunity to go in there and buy it because you have cash on the sidelines when everybody else is a forced seller, you might make enough money over a 1 week or a 1 month period to make up for any losses of the inflation
100%.
You had for sitting in cash for 6 months. So I would recommend that people have cash in their portfolio right now.
Absolutely. Cash is ammo right now. It's ammunition.
Yep.
And as you say, in an environment where there's going to be such a downshift and so much deflationary contraction, it's the least contracting in a contracting ball. And then at the bottom, you get to buy something with a far stronger beta to the upside. You come out of that always up. And so you take one step back to go seven steps forward. It's a great trade.
Yep.
And absolutely.
You know, and related to that, I would tell people, you know, I think everybody knows that we've been in an inflationary environment. But I think people are too quick to choose either the deflation or the inflation camp. I've often gotten, you know, labeled as a deflationist because I think the dollar is going higher, and that typically is the case. But it's not, number one, it's not always the case. And number two, rather than just picking a camp, just I think it would behoove you just to understand what are the drivers that could lead to either higher inflation or higher deflation, and understand how either of them could happen, or perhaps both of them happen, and just have that cash on the sidelines to be able to deploy when you see those things happen. But you know, the idea that you have to pick one camp or the other, I think is wrong.
Yes, it's a binary approach. It's sort of on and off light switch. There's no volume in between. And I think, as you say, we're basically both sitting very similarly, waiting for the hammer to fall and wanting to see it. And unfortunately, it's very difficult to predict, because you were saying you were apologizing for not sufficient detail on ideas. It's difficult to know what kind of a crash we get. It's different if you get a general equity correction now to starting tomorrow, versus if you get a full-blown Lehman bank failure, credit-based thing that occurs 3 months from now. The effect, the knock-ons, what goes up, what goes down, there is some variances that have to be taken into account there as well. And it's very hard. And it's almost like there's a chasm. We're kind of driving, the headlights are not so good, and we know from the map that there's a serious dip coming in the road. And you almost have to just drive real slowly and not talk about where you're going to be tomorrow, and just negotiate this short-term obstacle, which I think is going to occur in the next, before H1 is up. I think a lot of things are going to occur. I think peg failure on the Hong Kong dollar, I still stand by that one. And I only pushed that one more recently when you and I met and said, you know, by 2023, because I feel the pressure has now reached that apex. It's not been something we've been saying. You know, Kyle started in 19 with that. I think he's right in principle, but he was early. The signs are far more different now. And I think we are reaching that peak apex. Brent, that's been absolutely phenomenal. We've truly appreciated having you on and coming on the late session as well, and anchoring our awesome stream and being a great part and being a regular guest. How do people best get in touch with you, engage, employ your services and your wisdom? Yep.
Well, if you go to santiagocapital.com, it's really just a landing page with my name and contact information on there, a few regulatory documents that I'm required to have. You can reach me, through that contact information there. I'm very active on Twitter. You can follow me there, Santiago Capital, or as you said earlier, the handle is Santiago AU Fund. I'm always happy to interact with people and answer questions when I have the time to do it. So look forward to interacting with people. Thanks, and I appreciate you inviting me to have me on.
Yeah, no, we love having you on. How's Porto? Are you in Puerto Rico at the moment?
I'm good. It's raining a little bit right now, but we had a hurricane about a month ago, and so we got through that okay. And now hurricane season is almost over, so it should be good from here on out.
Survived another year. That's great news to hear. Brent Johnson, everybody, thank you so much for coming on. Truly appreciate having you, and look forward to doing this again in 6 months and seeing how much of what we expect and how it all turns out for while waiting for lightning to strike.
Yep. Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.